Children's children are a crown to the aged, and parents are the pride of their children. Proverbs 17:6. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I am your host, Phil Gonzalez. It's Phil. And this week, we're covering a book that I should have covered a few months ago. I know I keep saying things like this at the top of each program, that I missed the book, or this is the wrong season for me to be covering this book. But I should have covered this book a couple of months ago. This is the wrong season to cover this book. But I did not know this, because I do not know anything about this holiday that we're covering, nor did I know that this book was about a specific holiday. I had no idea. It doesn't give any indication that it's a fake holiday anyway. And I know all holidays are fake. No holidays exist in nature. Animals do not automatically know to celebrate Arbor Day. So all holidays are fake. I know that. But this is one of the sneakier little holidays that's crept in over the years. It's not Mother's Day, the one people always say, it's a fake holiday. It's not Father's Day. No, it's Grandparents' Day. That's right. We are going to be taking a look at, I think, the only Berenstain Bears book that actually covers this this particular holiday. Yes, this week we are covering, let me just move over, make room for this. The Berenstain Bears Bless Our Gramps and Gran. It is a Living Lights faith story, a Zonderkids book by Mike Berenstain. It is a piece of work. It's actually more fascinating than I'm making it sound like. It's a very fascinating book because of the direction it heads in, and about in the last third, you think it's going to go in one direction and it goes in another. The hints being, it's a Zonderkids book. So it's got to work in the religion stuff, but the religion stuff gets way further away from grandparenthood than I thought it was going to. Even though the proverb up top directly addresses grandparenthood, which I don't know how common that is for the Bible. Do they talk about grandparents a lot in the Bible? I don't know. It just seems like, oh, this is your rare opportunity. In fact, some translations don't say parents or whatever. It says grandparents, or children's children. It says grandchildren. Like, you're allowed to say that. I don't know if they actually said that back then, if they had a specific term for it, but the Bible, you know, it's old. It's got a lot of old ideas. But what is this book about anyway? And why is my hair so terrible? If you're watching this on YouTube and not just listening along at home, my hair is a nightmare. I went to the gym today for the first time in like 4 years, and it was great. I had a great time. I just ate too much spaghetti for dinner, so I actually have a bit of a tummy ache. It doesn't have anything to do with my hair. I also had to go to the grocery store for pasta sauce and wore a hat that made my hair all nightmarish, and I don't have time. I am just now realizing how bad I feel. I ate way too much spaghetti. And I know that some of you may be thinking, Phil, there's no such thing as too much spaghetti. There's too much spaghetti. Are you ready for sketty? I'm not. I don't want any spaghetti anymore. In fact, if I don't ever look at spaghetti again, it'll be too soon. I had salad with it, just so my doctor is listening. I had to sign up for going to the gym because my cholesterol's high. I got to get the cholesterol back down. And I know you're looking at me and you're like, you don't look like a guy with high cholesterol. But trust me, you get to a certain age, the cholesterol, it's a thing you got to start looking at. So anyway, I have to start working out again. I have to build up muscle tone. I mean, look at these noodle arms I have. I got to get big arms. I want to be a muscle man to impress all my viewers. All however many 40 of you. However many people actually watch this on YouTube. On audio, who cares what I look like? But on video, got to have that face. I'm also wearing my new glasses if you want to see what they look like. Go to my YouTube page if you're not watching it already. These are my new glasses. I'm very pleased with them. In any case, the Berenstain Bears Bless Our Gramps and Gran. Let's get into it. So we already read that opening, the opening spiel. The children of the children's children are a crown to the aged. Great. And we see the whole Bear clan, including Gramps and Gran, with a crown floating over them. Because they're kings, I guess. They are royalty. Aren't we all royalty in the bosom of our families? Let's find out. So it's a stormy day. It's a rainy day. And the Cubs are bored because it's rainy outside. They've been playing with their Noah's Ark playset. Now, keep this in mind. Let's put a pin in that. It's a Noah's Ark playset. The rains are coming down, not unlike in that story about the Ark, about Noah. They're bored. They've had enough fun. I know that their room is filled with toys, but they're bored. So they start thinking. Papa's like, hey, look, school's starting next week. You should be getting pretty excited about that. And then Mama like, school started last week. You should be pretty excited about that, which is the weirdest thing a parent could ever say. Aren't you still all worked up about school starting a week ago? Papa asks, as if he hasn't had children for the last 60 years. And then Mama's like, yeah, and do your homework. And the kids are like, homework, homework, homework. That's all we have to look forward to every day. And Papa's like, but Halloween's coming up. And that's why I'm telling you right now that this book is a little behind, because Halloween is coming up in 2 months, because it's the beginning of September. School just started and they don't have anything fun going on. It's that weird time. School starts. You got to wait 2 months for Halloween. Of course, we know. Spooky season already. I mean, I hate bringing it up because spooky season is in the rearview mirror at this point, but like long in the rearview mirror at this point. But spooky season in early September is pretty cool and fun. They should be cutting out ghosts from construction paper or crepe paper, or whatever you cut ghosts out from. So the kids are like, it's 2 months to October, nothing to look forward to. There's no fun anywhere, no fun at any time. And the papa's like, hey, don't you remember that? Didn't you know? Then in just a couple of days, it's Grandparents' Day. And the kids are like, well, I don't know what you're talking about. And Papa's like, it's right here on the calendar. And they've circled Grandparents' Day. Now, this is something, keep in mind, this is something that Mama and Papa have never brought up with the kids before, okay? This is the first time any of the kids is hearing about Grandparents' Day. They're like, what's that? I mean, even though a five-year-old should be able to hear them go, let's see, there's Mama's Day and Papa's Day. This is Grandparents' Day. What? I don't understand. What's a grandparent? You know, your gramps and gran. So according to Papa and according to the truth, Grandparents' Day always falls on the Sunday after Labor Day, which is wild. And what's funny is I got so caught up in the other thing that had to research for this book, because this book is a lot denser than you would think. I forgot to look up Grandparents' Day itself. So Grandparents' Day was started by Richard Nixon. So hooray, I guess, at least in his on June 12th, 1969, President Nixon Russell Capper, this 9-year-old kid, sends a letter to President Nixon suggesting a Grandparents' Day. Then he gets a letter back from Nixon's personal secretary, Rosemary Woods, that reads, quote, Dear Russell, thank you for your letter to President Nixon. Your suggestion regarding a Grandparents' Day is appreciated, but the president ordinarily issues proclamations designating periods for special observance only when a congressional resolution authorizes him to do so. With best wishes, sincerely, Rosemary Woods, personal secretary to the president. So, the idea was floated to Nixon, who put the kibosh on it. I just want that out there. Thanks to Nixon, we had to wait for Grandparents' Day. So the letter gets recognized in the Senate and by President Jimmy Carter, who ends up founding No, Marion McQuaid ends up founding National Grandparents Day during the Carter administration. Senators Jennings, Randolph, and Robert Byrd put forth the Grandparents Day. Jennings Randolph, that's one name. Senator Jennings Randolph of West Virginia introduced the resolution in 73 to make a Grandparents Day. And in 77, he got a bunch of senators together to issue a joint resolution as the Sunday of September after Labor Day. And then on August 3rd, 1978, Jimmy Carter signed the proclamation to honor grandparents, to give grandparents an opportunity to show love for their children's children and to help children become aware of strength, information, and guidance older people can offer. Now, you're wondering right now, has the Pope ever declared Grandparents Day? Yes, in 2021, Pope Francis declared World Day for Grandparents and the Elderly to take place annually on the fourth Sunday of July, neighboring the Memorial Days of Saints. I don't know how to say it. I was going to say Joaquin, but that's probably wrong. And Anne, the grandparents of Jesus. Jesus had grandparents, don't you know it? Grandparents Day is the last Sunday in October in Australia, September 9th in Bangladesh, July 26th in Brazil. I'm not going to read every country has a Grandparents Day. The national flower for Grandparents Day, the forget-me-not. Don't forget them Gramps's. Don't forget them Grands. So that's a little background on Grandparents Day, just so you know, and so I know it's a real thing. The Cubs didn't know because nobody knows. It's not celebrated. Do you celebrate Grandparents Day? Let me know in the comments. I don't care. I care. Fingers crossed when I said it. Can we celebrate Grandparents Day with our own Gramps and Gran? Asked Sister. And even though Mike doesn't illustrate this, and even though he doesn't draw this, and even though he doesn't write this, and even though Mama says, good idea. In fact, we should start a new Bear family tradition. Let's celebrate Grandparents Day every year, starting this year. You still know, especially since we don't see Papa's face in these next two pages, you still know they just died a little inside. Like, these are our 2 months to not have to worry about a darn thing, and now we have to get ready for Grandparents Day every year. You didn't even know it was Grandparents Day 2 minutes ago. All of a sudden, it's a yearly tradition. Thanks, Papa, for bringing it up, because now we're going to have to do something for Grizzly Gramps and Gran every year. And you might be thinking, so what, Phil? It's a nice thing to do. And I'm like, they do enough for them. You've met Gramps. How many times has he gone after someone with a pitchfork or a baseball bat? Not enough times. And the Cubs are excited. They love their Gramps and Gran. But they're confused. We know what to do for Mother's Day and Father's Day, but what do we do for Grandparents Day? Probably the same things you do for Mother's Day and Father's Day. Write them a card. Buy them flowers. Go visit them. You see them every other day. It's your Grizzly Gramps and Gran. They live up the road. Papa's like, oh. Let's think of all the ways we can, think of all the ways they're important to us. I am being overly sarcastic in this episode. I don't know why. I actually like this book. I'm trying to get to the good part, though. So Brother's like, I like it when Grizzly Gramps takes us fishing because he always baits the hooks for us. And Gran takes us on nature walks because she knows the names of all the butterflies and all the birds. They let the kids win at checkers and cards. Like, the kids don't realize it, but they do. Grandpa plays the banjo and can whistle Yankee Doodle through his nose, which is disgusting. You see him with his finger closing one nostril, and there's, oh my God, that felt really weird. I just put my finger to one nostril, and I almost did what I was about to say Grizzly Gramps does. You know that, like, a void of mucus has shot out of Grizzly Gramps' face before Yankee Doodle plays, right? He can whistle Yankee Doodle through his nose, sure. Voot! Then he starts whistling it. That was the sound of him voiding his nostril. What happened was I put my... What? I almost did it again. I put my finger out to my, I can do it on this nostril. I put my finger, I close one nostril, and I start talking, and all of a sudden I can feel things rimbling and rumbling, shimmying and shaking inside my sinuses, ready to pour out, which would be fine if this was just an audio podcast, but I'm making a video. So Gran bakes for them, yada, yada, yada. She lets them lick the spoon. Also, Grizzly Gramps make ships and bottles, which is pretty rad, and Grizzly Gran can make clothes for their dolls. And guess what? Gramps and Gran also made the toy Noah's Ark that they were playing with at the very beginning of the story. That started off this whole thing. Gramps made the Ark and Gran made the animals, and I gotta tell you, they went out of their way to make an awesome Noah's Ark. There's two giraffes, two elephants, two hippopotamuses, two crocodiles. That's it. There's just four animals represented here. We know there's more in the arc, in the story, but Grizzly, Gramps, and Gran got tired after four. But we see a lot of people, figures. Gran made Noah, his family, and the animals. We're getting there, trust me. So then Mama's like, do you ever think about what happened to Noah and his wife after the flood when they left the ark with all the animals, their sons' wives? And no, why would we think about that? Ass says sister. I mean, they didn't say that, but that's basically the implication because they've never thought about it. Well, they became grandparents is what they say. Well, pinch my toes, says brother. Goodness gracious me. Everyone was having babies all over the place. He does say that. Everyone was having babies all over the place, which they probably were. There were no, like, hospitals or birthing centers. They just had babies all over the place. Just right there on the floor. Right there on the ground. Just right there on the dirt. Squatted down and out rolled a baby. Just rub some mud on it to clean it up, and then it's just that's it. I guess that's what they did. That baby's all over the place. Papa says God told them to be fruitful and increase in number and fill up the earth again, and that's just what they did, and that is exactly what God said. He said be fruitful and increase in number. Now, if you don't know the story of Noah's Ark, first of all, what's the matter with you? Second, it's a... The Noah's Ark part of Noah's Ark, the Ark part of the Ark, is a big deal. It's a big part of the story. It's also bloated with symbolism, right? Like, these are really old stories. These are stories that even, like, the Jewish scholars... 2,500 years ago... When they wrote about these stories, when they were like talking about these stories, they were even just like, these are allegories. Like, right? Like, even like the firm, like we were there, members of the Jewish organization, I guess, and early Christians and everyone. They were like, these were all allegorical tales. This is a, you know, there's a lot going on in these stories, but they understood this was not literally what happened. A, because none of them were there. B, because that's the way these stories were told. They had deep symbolic meanings behind them. Also, they may have known some Mesopotamians at some point who would have been like, how's that flood story of yours? Pretty good flood story you got going on there. Huh, don't notice any snake god in your flood story. Floods, every major religion that grew up around a river has a flood story. Like, that's just because the river floods. And then you sort of, that's like the biggest deal, right? So then the story basically is God notices that the whole world has become wicked. He decides to wipe it out. The flood is a reverse creation. He decides to return the world to the chaos that it was at the beginning and start over from scratch with one family, the only good family on earth, Noah and his family. He has three sons. They have wives. Noah has a wife. Noah's already like 900 years old. So they're like, all right, I'm going to flood the earth, build an ark. It's not a boat. It's an ark. An ark being something that you keep something, you know, sacred or precious in this case, all life, the future of the world. Put it in this box. Build a box that I can put all these animals in. Make it yay big, yay tall. I'm going to flood the earth. You guys will float around for a while. And then when it's done and everyone's dead and drown, everyone is dead and drown. All the men and women, all the screaming children, all the innocent babies who I guess they're dead too. all the puppy dogs that didn't make it onto the yard, the cute mice living in their mice holes, shrews, capybaras, penguins, all of them, only have room for two of some, seven of others. Then we'll start over again. I don't know why he had to kill all the animals, but I guess, like, how would you save the animals? I don't know why it had to be a flood god. I mean, I guess, like, it's symbolic, but it seems like pretty, those babies probably didn't do anything, but it's symbolic. It's symbolism. It's a symbolic tale. So he floods the earth. Mark bobs around for a while, crash lands on Mount Ararat. The raven, the dove, rainbow. I'll never do this again, says God. And I specifically mean, I will never do this specific type of flood again. I will wipe out all of humanity eventually, but not with a flood, with flames. And that's usually where the story ends. Hooray, be fruitful and multiply. However, there's more to this story. Remember, Noah had three sons. So the Cubs get an idea. We're going to write a story about Noah and his wife and all their children, for grandchildren, for Gramps and Gran. Well, that's great. And we could give it to them right after church on Sunday on Grandparents' Day. This is a great idea. Great. So they set to work. And I love this, right? This is a major biblical project. Like, talk about going to the source. Congratulations, kids. You've moved past storybook Bible at this point, because they set to work. They have to learn about Noah's family in the Bible. Now, it turns out there's a lot of more about Noah's family than there is about this ark. In fact, if you read the story out loud, it does go on. It goes on. Noah's family goes on and on and on for quite a while. But he has these three sons, Ham, Shem, and Japheth. Japheth? Japheth. Japheth? Is that it? Japheth. I think I'm right. Ham, Shem, Japheth. Am I right? Yes. Okay. I wasn't looking right at my notes. So I just want to make sure I got that right. I know them, but I get nervous. Now, if their names sound familiar, that's because you may have heard of the nations of Noah's generations who came after. Now, Shem, Ham, and Japheth were used by German scholars in the 18th century to come up with the division of races. The descendants of Shem, the descendants, quote-unquote, were known as the Semites. The descendants of Ham were the Hamites. And the descendants of Japheth were the, say it with me, Japhetites. But they also had grandkids. There's a ton. You could read the genealogy, the generations of Noah, as they're called, the table of nations of Noah, for a whole evening, like in your room, because it goes on. You learn the ages of all these people when they died. It goes on. But so you have people like certain the grandkids. You have Elam, Asher, Aram, Cush, and Canaan, who became the Elamites, the Assyrians, the Arameans, the Cushites, and the Canaanites. The sons of Canaan, Heth, Jebus, and Amorus, where we got the Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites. Eber, Shem's Eber, is where we get the word Hebrews. Cush gave us Nimrod, and Mizraim gave us the Philistines. So all these nations, as it were, came from these kids, because they're the first family now. Like, to Adam, that didn't work out. I mean, I know that Noah's supposed to be like a descendant of Adam, but like, this is the new beginning. What I found interesting, though, reading about this, was the fact that the nations that are used, that's how they refer to these different groupings. The word for nations in the Hebrew is goyim, goy, it's a plural of goy, which I always knew as non-Jewish person, right? But I guess, like, back in the day, it just meant group of people. And so it's usually translated as nation. And then later on, it took on the meaning of like heretics, like people who didn't worship one god. So like the Christians were referred to as goyim, not because they weren't Jewish, but because the Christian sects were seen as worshiping multiple gods, because there was like this whole like God and the Son thing, like the Father and the Son, later the Holy Spirit, like, and they had like these pantheons of angels and stuff. So there was this notion that Christianity was not monotheistic. It was not polytheistic. There's that term for when there's like the head God and then like subordinate, like heavenly beings underneath them. So it wasn't seen as purely monotheistic. So they were goyim. And then later on, it took on a meaning of just non-Jewish people. But at this point, it just meant nations, the goyim. So yeah, so the generations of Noah, the table of nations, they go on and on and on and on. So there's, you know, you find out the family of Japheth, the family of Ham, the family of Shem, and it goes on and on and on and on and on. But I mean, because I'm looking at this right now, like the sons of Japheth are Gomer and Magog and Madai and Javan and Tuval and Meshech and Tiras. Well, the names of their dioceses. Yeah, it just goes on. So in any case, there's also like contradictory lists of names. Like they sometimes, like Genesis gives two lists of the descendants of Shem that contradict each other. So it's weird. In any case, I'm getting off track here, because the point is, at the end of the Noah's Ark story, Noah grows a vineyard. He's the first wine grower. He's the first guy to own a vineyard. He establishes a vineyard, makes wine, and immediately becomes an alcoholic. Like, that's literally what happens. He's just like, I'm done. I built the ark. I saved humanity. I'm getting wasted, and I'm going to stay wasted for the rest of my days. He gets drunk, and he passes out. And what happens? Well, he gets discovered. And who discovers him? Ham. Ham rolls up on his dad and he's like, whoa. Because Noah, let's just say that his skirts were up above his knees, the way he fell asleep. So Ham walks into his tent or his cave or whatever. And he's like, goodness gracious, great balls of fire. Walks back out, turns to his brothers, Japheth and Shem, and is like, Dad's passed out drunk in there, and he is butt bum naked. We got to do something about it. So Japheth and Shem, I'm going to read this the way it's written. So this is Genesis 9, and let's see, Genesis 9 and 20. Shem and Japheth took a cloak and put it over both their shoulders and walked backward and covered their father's nakedness. Their faces turned backward, so they did not see their father's nakedness, which is the weirdest. I mean, I guess if you're going to cover up someone's naked body and you don't want to look at it, you got to walk backwards and hold the cloak like this. And be like, I've never been able to figure out how they pulled this off. Because then Noah wakes up and he's like, no. He's like, cursed be Canaan. And they're like, what? Because, okay, so he curses not Ham, but Ham's son, Canaan. Not all of his kids, just the one son, Canaan. And he says he's going to be a slave to his brothers. And then he's like, and he's also going to be a slave to Shem. And he's going to be a slave to Japheth. And everyone they know. Canaan will always be a slave. And then he goes back to sleep. And then he dies when he's like 950 years old. But that's like one of the weirdest, most controversial parts of the Bible. Because people are like, what's going on? Like, why did he get so upset at Ham? What did Ham do? Ham didn't do nothing. Ham just saw his dad naked. But it's not like he like went in looking for it. His dad was just naked. Like, Noah was just naked and passed out drunk. And he went and he was like, God, we gotta cover our dad up. And then his son gets punished for something? Look, people have been arguing about this for 2,000 years. One thing we know, several things we know, a lot of things we know, but one thing we know is that the Bible, particularly the Hebrew Bible, but even the Christian books of the Bible, they are all making allusions to things that we have no idea what they're talking about, to texts that we have never read because they don't exist anymore. They're lost to the ages. And we know this because writers, it's even in the books of the Bible, reference other sources. They sometimes drop their sources. They'll quote something and say, this is from this is from that. And a lot of times it's just referencing back to other books. But or sometimes it's referencing books in ways that that they're not written, because these books got, you know, messed around with over the years. So the version that one person had isn't the version another person would have. So they'll say, like, as it says in this, and then it won't fit the version that we've ever read because we just don't have that version anymore. So we know that. We also know that they're like, as it says in this source, blah, 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 blah. And it'll be referring to a book that we've never even heard of because that book doesn't exist. But we also know that they make allusions to books that we have read without crediting their source. They'll just toss out a quote and we're just supposed to recognize it. And we know this because we have those sources, which also means they have to be referring to things without crediting their sources that we have no idea. Like, just logically, that's how it works. If they're doing it with stuff we still have copies of, not crediting sources, but for stuff that we know, they have to be just as equally quoting things that we just don't know. We'll never know. So there's references to things in these stories that are going over our heads and will go over our heads for the rest of eternity, because we just will not have these books unless there's another cache of Dead Sea Scrolls somewhere. So many scholars, I'm going to be even vague because I'm not going to start naming them, but many scholars believe, have deduced, that this story is referring to something else, something that would have been familiar to the audience who read it originally, but would have been too weird to, like, name specifically, would have gone against, like, contradicted other things. So they just sort of, like, gloss past it. We don't know what Ham did. It could be referring to a story that most people were familiar with. We don't know. What is usually accepted, though, is that this story is used as a way of subjugating or justifying the projected future, this projected future subjugation of the Canaanites. You've got to set up that they're cursed for some reason and that they're supposed to be our slaves because we need to get We need to be the lorded over the Canaanites. So we'll have this story set that up, even though it doesn't really make sense. We need that in there. As it says in this translation in the notes, it says, thus the whole story is made to justify the merely hoped for subject status of the Canaanites in relation to the descendants of Shem, the Israelites, because that's where the Israelites come from, the descendants of Shem. But we don't really know what he did. There's I'm not going to get into it because there's, let's just say that it's unsavory and leave it at that. It's also parallels what happens with Lot after his story, which also has drunkenness involved and children and things in a cave, but we're not going to go into that because the bears certainly don't. It's a deep story. And I'm just fascinated that Mike was like, let's talk about the descendants of Noah, because no one ever does in children's books. Like, what happens after Noah's Ark? And then this happens. And then the Tower of Babel is usually what they jump right to. But we don't usually get this story. Now, of course, the bears don't talk about the curse of Ham. They don't talk about that. The curse of Ham, which was used to justify, what was that again? The African slave trade? Oh, that's interesting. Oh, I see. Yeah, it looks like people said that the curse of Ham was people getting a black skin color, and so it's they are supposed to be slaves to everyone. So yeah, so these stories can be used to justify a lot of hot garbage. But again, the Bears don't talk about that. Instead, they make this great family tree of Noah and Mrs. Noah, Noah's sons and their wives. And what's great is the Bible doesn't mention any of the granddaughters. So the kids make up their own granddaughters. So you have the sons, Gomer and Magog, Madai, Jeron, Tubal, Meshach, Tiras, and the sisters. You have Betsy and Chris, Millie and Lulu, Debbie and Gwen and Patty. You have the children of Ham, Cush, that good, good Cush, Mizrain, Foot, Canaan, and then their sisters, Sue and Jasmine, Riley and Caitlin. Then you have the children of Shem, Elam, Asher, Arphaxad, Lud, Aram, and then their sisters, Heather and Babs, Ginger, Rita, and Shirley. And then they draw pictures of all of them, and they are pretty cute mic pictures. And on Sunday, they visit Gramps and Gran and give them the gift. Noah's 16 grandsons and all of his granddaughters. And Gran is like, did Noah really have granddaughters named Betsy, Chris, and Millie? And they're like, never mind. What's important is that the kids love you. It's literally what Mama says. Never mind. They love you. They give him hugs. And Gramps says, we may not have as many grandchildren as Noah and his wife, glaring at his son, but we do have three of the very best. And that is presumably the way our story ends, because I have this book as an e-book. Now, unlike the last e-book I covered, this one's in the right order. But it's the Zonder Kids book, which means I also had to buy it as a physical copy. Why? Because the e-book versions of the Zonder Kids books don't include the questions. They don't include the activities in the back. These great discussion questions Mike comes up with that I've always liked. I think they're a great addition. Don't know why they're not included in the ebook. You're getting less book. So I'm going to turn this puppy off. And we're going to talk about the questions. Here we go. Things, is it brother and sisters, things to do? And oh no, this is different. Celebrate Grandparents' Day the Bear Country way. Be a bear. Grandparents' Day is meant to be a day to show love to our grandparents. A day for grandparents to have extra time with their children's children and a day to set aside to honor all older folks. Thank you, Pope Francis. All old people, not just the grandparents. And the cool things they do for their families, their friends, and here's Mike, their community. We are community people. Here's some ideas on how to celebrate the day. So you've got like most of the year to plan this if you don't celebrate Grandparents' Day yet. Have a family brunch or a dinner with grandma and grandpa and have some of their favorite food. Well, you know what? We were going to do that anyway, because when we don't have their favorite food, grandma complains. Plan a game day. Board and card games are fun for everyone, no matter what age. Are they? Are they, though? This will provide time for everyone to spend quality and fun time together. And hey, you know who loves doing whatever? Grandparents. Grandma, Grandma, play my Disney princess, Sorry. I would love to. I would love to play this for hours. Because they're grandparents. I'm going to be the worst grandfather. I'm so worried about that, because I'm going to be like, ugh, I don't like doing things. Maybe I'll be the storyteller. That's what I'll be. Come sit by Grandpa. Let me tell you the story of the time I got in trouble at school for writing an obscenity on the cafeteria menu board. I'm not going to tell that story on the air, but it's true. No one's ever heard that story because I'm very embarrassed by it. Help organize a day of celebration at church or school. Invite grandparents and older folks to come share stories about the town you live in, local families, local traditions, or legends. They literally are doing this at Mitzi's school. They're literally having a grandparents' day this month, and Mitzi's grandparents don't live in the city. And last year, that was a deal. But this year, she's having a friend come because it's also like Cool People Day. She's having a friend come who is an older friend who was on this show many, many, many years ago for the Berenstain Bears and the sitter, Linda, the woman who basically raised her for 3 years while we were at work. Honor your grandparents and all older citizens and community members. And Linda's definitely an awesome community member. So shout out to Linda. Play the piano and instruments include songs that were popular when they grew up. Don't sit under the something tree with anyone else but me. Include ice cream, social, or cookies and punch for an extra treat. Unless they can't eat that stuff, then don't serve it. You don't want to see Grandpa after he's had dairy. Adopt a grandparent project. Adopt a grandparent project. I was like, adopt one of their projects. Gramps, I notice you've been trying to fix those suspenders for years. I'm adopting that project. No, adopt a grandparent. Working with a neighborhood nursing home or senior center. Okay, we're getting complicated now. Match pairs of kids with an older person for some fun. Have them make cards at birthdays or holidays. Okay, making cards, that's cool. Arrange visits, do sing-alongs or Bible studies. Not if you're, you know, make sure they're Christians before you do that. But there are organizations that help do outreach like that. I thought it was going to be like, just show up at an old folks home. But no, please don't do that. They like their structure. But if there's an organization that has things like that, this sort of outreach to older community members, then sure. They like seeing faces. They certainly don't get enough nice ones around those faces. All my grandparents are dead. They're dead. I guess I shouldn't have said it like that. That was a little harsh. But my grandparents died. Grandfathers first. Never got to know them very well. Grandmothers later got to know them pretty well. They were nice people. So I never had a grandpa bait a hook for me, which was fine because I didn't like being outside. So that was the Berenstain Bears. Bless our gramps and gran. Bless our shims and hams. Bless our ice cream man. Don't let gramps eat that ice cream. That's a bad plan. You'll get all plugged up or something. I don't know what happens when a person eats. Okay, in any case. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching. If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure and listen to It's Del Toro Time. We are covering, what is this week's? We are covering Crouch End by Stephen King. So if you like your King, check it out. It's a spooky one. Otherwise, thank you for joining me. And I'll see you all next time deep in Bear Country.